You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you.
Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight. As usual, this time of the day is, your favorite duo here on Eagle FM, keeping your company until the hour of 6 with one exciting topic, one day at a time.
One day at a time, guys.
Yeah.
And we do it in such a lovely way, you won't even need coffee. Even though I've got coffee here with me, you wouldn't even need coffee. And this is obviously as you are, some of you are trying to find your way home.
Yeah.
Some of you are thinking about your homes, waiting for 5 o'clock. Some of you are thinking about Helmut while you are spending your pay while going home.
Speaking of pay...
I just had to throw that in there, since you wished them yesterday.
I know, right? Speaking of pay, pay entails money, especially in modern day terms. Money is something that we're going to be talking about today, and that's in reference to the financial infrastructure and basically the financial world, aspect of the African continent, obviously looking at it from the African Union level. And this is coming from the 39th ordinary session of the Assembly of the African Union that took place from Valentine's Day of all days they could have chosen, Valentine's Day to the 15th of, from the 14th to the 15th of February 2026, and this was in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. Now, one of the things that they
why are you thinking about Valentine's Day, Helmut? I'm now realizing where does this Valentine's Day
whoever come? Organized this event on was dumped that very same week, so he decided to ruin it for everyone else.
Are you talking about now the AU guys?
Exactly.
How difficult do you think it is to dump an AU head of state? Who probably has the chief of the army on speed dial and the chief of intelligence on speed dial. How difficult do you think it is for a woman or whatever the flavor of that particular political leader is to dump that political leader on the 14th of February?
Okay. It must be very difficult considering their financing the entire day. I can only imagine how difficult.
guys, you didn't hear these jokes from us. Now, please don't quote us. We give you free copyright to make these jokes, please.
Yeah, just please go ahead.
Don't say where you heard this joke or this train of thought. We are not responsible.
Don't put it like that. If you end up being famous, give us credit. If you end up in jail, leave us out of it. That's how. What? I don't want to go to jail.
Talk about being positive, being positively affirmed.
I know. So
think happy thoughts, guys. Think happy thoughts. Let's not be negative.
Don't go negative.
Yeah.
Okay. Now let's just be positive. So if you end up making a behind load of money out of it, make sure that our names are somewhere, even in the footnotes. I don't mind.
So you even want recognition now?
Yeah.
Okay.
If comedy fails, if law school fails, if I'm either starting a church or starting a political party, turns out it's much easier to lie to people than tell them the truth. That's one thing I've discovered. Just start a church, especially ladies. Just start a church.
But now all the church ladies will now hear about the statement that you make.
What? All you just have to do is do the math of how many of the ratio of men to women into miracle churches, and you'll understand why you should start one. Because it makes a very easy way to launder money.
What?
Look, I blame the University of Eagle FM. I did not know this before 2021. Now I do.
How do you think our employer feels now after you highlighted? Well, if I was walking around, completely naive, not knowing anything about the world.
I would be one of them. I would be one of the people calling you, telling you, this president, what is he doing? And then you'll be like, okay, for the millionth time, according to this piece of legislation, he or she is allowed to say that or is allowed to do that.
Yeah.
You know, things that look very, pretty much obvious to you. But if I was just, you know, the, how about like the, just the shortly, you know, basically from childhood all the way through, shortly 2-3 years after high school, me, I would be one of those people who would be calling you to ask questions that seems very obvious. Now, information is out there. Well, and that's the irony. It's, it has never been much easier to access information in the history of mankind than today.
Mm.
But still, a lot of people are still lagging behind on a lot of things, even the simple ones. Now,
yeah.
One of those things that we're going to be looking at, and one of those like disciplines that basically still remains a mystery for, to a lot of people, is the financial world. It's wrapped in a lot of terminology and a lot of world mystery, to the point where a lot of us don't even, you know, don't even understand how the the basics of how the financial world works.
Mm.
And the easiest way to look at this is take scamming, for example. Someone is telling you they will make you 50% or 70-80% return on investment after 40 days.
I mean, that is wonderful, Helmut, and then all they tell you is just send me the money.
You just send me your money.
No paperwork filled in.
No paperwork. You are not signing anything.
No guarantee that you'll get your money, 100% money back guarantee situation.
In the event
just
of that investment.
Send me the money.
Just send me the money. It's guaranteed to work 100% of the time. Look,
Namibians are gullible, Helmut.
That's why I'm saying it's painful.
Namibians are gullible. We've all had to learn hard lessons, and the lessons, Helmut, were not from personal lessons that I saw.
Yeah.
Or that I felt. It's lessons that we discussed here.
Yeah.
Do you know, every time when you highlight the scamming example.
Yeah.
And you don't make any mention of the Minister of Defense at the time. Nah, I always think about him. Because all he said was, the guy sounded professional.
Nah.
Do you know how sad I feel for his part?
You feel sad.
I'm
sad. Terrified.
I feel sad for him because, okay.
You feel sad for him?
Personally, I don't know the minister. I don't know Minister Kapofi. But for the discussion of being able or being quoted of being said where he sounded professional. And I sent him 200,000.
Hey.
That's the guy in charge of your guns, by the way. Now, the thing is, this guy's going to be looking for us.
Yeah, he'll call us. But he actually looks like a chill character. I don't know the man. I've never met the man. But he looks like a chill character.
He looks like a chill dude.
As long as he stays away from people who sound professional.
That's one thing I've come to to learn. I think primarily through the president of Rwanda, people that have a military background. Most of the people that I've seen that have military background, they are very calm, very observant.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, now, the only people that are freaked out by everything, then they start throwing tantrum, is mostly us civilians.
Not just us civilians. Us civilians who don't know what's potentially happening or impacting their lives.
Yeah.
For example, like me and this mic. Why is
World War III is about to start.
Why is it not providing the level of whatever you call it, but yeah.
Comfort. Let's talk about the African Union. Now, this is going to have a lot of similarities to the African Union discussions we have already had, especially in terms of any type of independence. We talked about independence in terms of having your independence from foreign military installations on the continent. And one thing we discovered is we are nowhere near accomplishing that goal. We are nowhere near because of the dependency for a lot of reasons, two of which were mentioned by the Institute of Security Studies was one, especially in case of Djibouti, a monetary one, because when these military installations are set up, they are they reach financial agreements. They reach some kind of agreements with the with the host country, of which these host countries are making millions in US dollars a year. So it's very difficult for you to you'll have to give them a much better offer for them to fall in line with your idea of let's get rid of all foreign military installations. That's the first one. The second one that was mentioned was the security one, and this is a very big concern, especially in the Sahel region, where a bunch of trigger-happy guys are running around shooting everything, with legs. And now you have a big problem here. So there are two aspects, there are two things that you're looking at, a monetary one and a security one, none of which the African Union can offer absolute assurance.
Hamoud, even our discussion, because we've even began very far with our talk for today now, the question we have to ask here, because remember, they mentioned three things.
Yeah.
Three core things that have always pained us Africans. And it also pains me, guys. I'm not making a joke, even though Helmut is all laughing. I'm just being dramatic here in the studio. It has pained me. Sorry. It has pained me as well. And the most famous of this, of these particular examples is, if you don't know, guys, and you saw our poster on our social media, our discussion is based upon the AU is planning on operationalizing by September this year an African Union central bank, or an African central bank. It exists, Hamoud, apparently in paper, or should I say in spirit. It exists apparently in spirit. Why? Our particular discussion, which stems from 14 April, like you said, someone really didn't like Valentine's Day, stems from the AU Heads of State engagement that our president was also at earlier this year. From identifying another AU agency known as the Association of African Central Banks, who is supposed to sort of like spearhead this overall implementation discussion of achieving or trying to operationalize the establishment of this African Central Bank. Now, yes, dear listeners, your ears might be standing up straight. You'll be going like, huh? AU is looking for an African Central Bank? Yes, they are looking for this. But what does an African Central Bank lead to, Hamoud? I want you to fill in this gap. What does a central bank usually administer?
Commercial banks?
No. Helmut. Don't leave me hanging, brah. Okay, let me start again. What does the Bank of Namibia, of what is Bank of Namibia in charge of?
Currency.
So, if the AU is trying to achieve a central bank and operationalizing.
Yeah, and a regional level.
A continental level. Not regional yet. And remember, SADC, well now from our SADC discussion of yesterday, SADC hasn't said anything about, SADC keeps talking about regional integration. Economic regional integration. And how they're trying to do this is trying to connect each other's countries through infrastructure, through transport, through electricity grids, then trying to utilize commercial activities like businesses, banking, tourism and travel. You do all the basic stuff. Mm-hmm. And then literally the premise that I gave when we started this discussion of how do we achieve interconnectedness on the continent was allow Africans to visit each other's countries, right? We connect each other.
And what's the biggest problem we run into every time we bring that discussion up?
Currencies. Whose currency is now going to take precedence? Whose currency?
Oh, no, the visiting each other part.
Yeah, the visiting each other part is obviously
physical infrastructure.
Infrastructure.
Visas.
Prices for each other.
Yeah.
And if you look at the reality, like in Namibia, what is the reality on the ground? All Namibia's tourism businesses in Namibia love Europeans and North Americans, and Asians are third in the tier.
Mm-hmm.
And South Africans and Angolans. All our tourism sector doesn't care about a Zambian, doesn't care about a Zimbabwean.
Why though?
Doesn't care about a Botswanan, even though a Botswanan between South Africa and Botswana, a Botswanan is coming in, coming through with a more stronger currency. The tourism activity, the tourism sector in Namibia does not care if you are from Africa. The South Africans realize, drive there yourself. Why would you have to fly? It just doesn't make sense.
More views, you know, your tour starts when you get in your car.
Exactly. But here's the thing. Between driving from Namibia to South Africa and driving South Africa to Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, you save on the money of the flight ticket that you would have taken. Yes, you can fly to Johannesburg in 2 hours. You can fly to Cape Town in 2 hours and vice versa.
But the point of a tour is seeing the place. And you can't do that when you're 10 kilometers away.
Exactly. Now, if you have a car and if you have a license, I'm talking about if you have these things.
Yeah.
If you have them.
You can just go.
You can convert that $3,000, $2,000 for that flight ticket into fuel.
Yeah.
Or if you're willing to pay for a coach, you know, driving there with a bus, you can do so. And you buy yourself a return ticket, you go and you come back. However, why would you fly? But it still is connecting far off tourism markets to Namibia and vice versa. Okay.
Africa's idea of a central bank.
Yeah. So that premise is set.
Yeah.
If you look at commercial activity.
Yeah.
Now.
Okay. Now that's the angle SADC is looking at it from.
Yeah. SADC knows what SADC has and SADC is building from it.
Okay.
That's what we also saw yesterday. SADC knows what it, okay, actually we saw it, was it Friday or yesterday that we did the SADC talk? Friday, I think.
Must be Friday.
Yeah, it was Friday. The SADC talk, not yesterday, because yesterday we did the report of the trust fund on regional
local authority.
Yeah.
Development.
So SADC knows what SADC has and SADC is just building from a strong position. But the AU, you can clearly see in discourse, meaning who's doing what, whose movements are leading to what. I can see more promising developments, Helmut, on a SADC level. But now, and the SADC is not even talking about anything about a central bank, a SADC central bank.
Nope.
SADC is not even saying anything yet. I still have to go do a deep, deep activity of searching through all the paperwork and the documentation on, digitally about whether or not SADC has made mention of a harmonized currency system potentially.
Yeah.
They haven't lent that way. They haven't made a notion or mention in that direction. I don't know why. However, they are striving to having an economic integrated region.
Yeah.
So, okay, economic integration speaks towards the gradual pathway that Europe took. Remember when I explained to you right after the Second World War, Europe went into this, hey guys, let's try and increase trade between each other. We are here. We only know each other for the past 1,000 years. That's now Western Europe. So let's increase this trade. America is helping us with the Marshall Plan to rebuild Europe because of the devastation that World War II has left. So we just need to trade with each other, help each other. You keep your currency, Helmut. I keep my currency. And we just build each other up in terms of, commercial activity, job creation, development, reconstruction, and all that.
Yeah, okay, maybe that's where we're copying. Okay, copying. Sure.
But so you can see
the idea of, take Euro, for example.
Yeah.
Yeah, like there are 27 member states.
Yeah.
And they came together and they were like, each one of us will have their own domestic currencies, but we'll come up with one that will be used on a block level. Now, the tricky part of it is when you are looking at it, if you look at the EU, for example, these are countries that are, first of all, there are two things that you have to look at here. One, the size in landmass of Africa and the EU, 27 countries plus 50 plus.
Isn't it 54?
Yeah.
We're currently at 54?
Yep. Yeah. Now, landmass, by landmass, Africa is ginormous. So, if you are going to connect all the 54 plus countries, because some of you know, some of them, the statehood is very much debatable. Now, if you are going to connect them.
Why would you say that?
Somaliland. If you are going to connect all of them.
Why would you say that? Why are you throwing sand in people's eyes now?
No, I'm just pointing out that they are becoming very difficult to count. And this is not just this is not just on the African level, by the way.
There's Western Sahara, you forget.
You know, this is even on an international level. If you just get someone from the UN and ask them, how many countries do we have on this planet? They'll be like, well, yeah, well, there's no short answer to that. And that's actually true because you'll be like, okay, now... should I count Taiwan, for example, as a country on its own or it's part of mainland China? Because that part is still a hot potato, especially in most parts of the Western world.
Mm.
Yeah. And now, here's the thing. If you are going to connect all the African continents just with roads, just take roads alone, you are going to require more material than the EU used to connect their 27 member states.
Yeah, and even railway. Because remember, Africa has got three flagship projects or infrastructure projects.
Yeah.
One is interconnected transport infrastructure, which includes rail and road.
Yeah.
Then it's ICT. And then there's a third one I keep forgetting. But this one is technically, the third one technically speaks to the AfCFTA.
Rail.
No, no. Rail and air are under the transport scenario.
Uh-huh.
AfCFTA then connects these first two to it. ICT is like connecting all ICT infrastructure.
Digital.
Yeah. Communication infrastructure across the like what Europe has.
Yeah.
Europe has the same thing. Europe has integrated ICT infrastructure. The same is what Europe is trying to achieve. Africa wants to achieve. So we've got those three. It's a question of are some countries taking it serious?
Yep. And, one thing. You know what, that point that was made by the Office of the Auditor General that we like to reference in terms of how ministries and SOEs in Namibia works, that they work in silos.
Yeah.
Yeah, Africa is nowhere near. I mean, these guys are working in silos that are so much, split from each other. It's going to be very hard to bring them into one block, which is why, uniting Africa with trade, like the EU does, and the digital infrastructure, physical transport and all those things, you can pull that off. But uniting, I've heard some of the debates of uniting Africa as one country with one president. I'm like, dude, forget.
Hey, they don't even want South Africa to be a
member of the UN Security Council. There is nowhere on God's green earth are you going to unite the entire Africa under one president. That's never happening.
Yeah.
Like, if you just look at the current political atmosphere, first of all, one of the reasons why I'm not a proponent of that is I live in a country that's just a little over 30 years old. With about 11, 12, 13 political parties, and just look at the disagreements.
Mm.
Now, expand that to 50 plus countries. That's a lot of, that's a lot of garbage that you're going to be listening to.
And what,
every election cycle.
And what did
where's the energy for that?
And what did the guy from Old Mutual South Africa say? We can't view each African country as 54 markets.
Yeah.
So for him,
yeah,
a single market approach sounds awesome because they can just, and this is what South Africa has done before, Helmut. There's a South African economy and then there's the rest of Africa.
Now, here's why I like to actually, keep quiet every time the whole idea of Africa under one president is brought up. I usually just ask two questions. One, just look at, just look at the three people here. Kagame, Museveni, and Tshisekedi.
Yeah.
Which one of these guys do you think is going to say, you know what, I'm fine here in the background. Let this guy take over power.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no way. If you look at it, in all 54 countries, they all have their power structure well drawn up.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anyone of these 54 countries in Africa, I don't think there's any leader who will just say, you know what, it's okay, my, you can just turn my country into, you know, into one of the states, and I will be governor, for example.
Yeah.
Let someone else be president. Yeah, no, that's not happening.
No, it's not, Helmut, because
it's not.
The concern, okay, what we are facing here is whose currency is going to carry this African currency? Because if you're coming to say, it's all good and well when they say, okay, let's try and operationalize a central bank. Okay, then you all as Southern Africa will now stand, and this is where my skepticism comes in. We all of SADC will now stand and look at, okay, so there's the three loose cannons there of Niger, Burkina Faso, and Mali. Throw Sudan in there, who's currently a black hole because no one knows what's going on there. Media are not reporting.
At least I know little of what's happening in Sudan, but Libya, I don't even know if, you know.
The same with Libya. We at least knew day by day what was happening in the Ethiopian civil war between the Tigrayan political party and the Tigrayan province of Ethiopia.
Yeah.
And the Ethiopian national government and the national army in that conflict. We heard day by day, week by week about casualties, destruction, losses. There was some serious reporting going on there.
If
you look at it from a media perspective, yeah. And information, access to information. If you go to Sudan, Helmut, we don't know what's going on in Sudan. Al Jazeera tries to tell you with fancy drone footage or Google Maps footage or Google Earth footage, because it's a satellite that's taking camera shots.
Yeah.
You know, what's the scale of damage, the scale of casualties? No one knows. Now we have to wait on the UN, and the UN itself is getting patchy information.
Yeah.
They're also getting patchy, because the UN is supposed to be like the first responder, technically, in a conflict scenario. They're supposed to be the first responder, and then the Security Council people and the General Assembly people go and
sit in an air-conditioned room somewhere in New York.
Okay, Jake, you are going far, Helmut. Jake, by a fair gegaan. The reason why I mention them is because they then have to start the next issue of, do they bring in a peacekeeping force? A peacekeeping force then is there to sort of like help with demining territories or combat zones, to help with policing, because one of the first things that happens in a conflict is police, law and order, and justice, just dispensation of justice, all fall away. The three main things that you need for law and order are first targeted and they first fall away. It's not just politicians, the legislative installation like your parliament that gets attacked.
Yeah.
It's the other things that come with law, with the dispensation of law.
Justice, yeah.
And justice that is also under threat. Alongside hospitals and education infrastructure and then civilian infrastructure. These particular
things. Throw energy into that. That's when it just gets worse.
Throw energy into that, which comes to commercial activities. So, and agriculture, because your farmers are usually the first that are attacked as well. When a civil war breaks out.
Yeah.
They're the first victims in many cases because they are on the outskirts,
the nearest police station.
Yeah. So
anything goes.
So, I mean, you just need to watch any, you know, zombie apocalypse movie and you'll also see that many times they start with a remote situation.
Yeah.
It's either a farmer or it's either someone hiking somewhere in the bush.
Yeah, that's how Jeepers Creepers starts.
Why did you go to the worst horror movie of all of them, Almud?
Because there's one lady on TikTok that started a war on TikTok, and she said she made a video saying that I think I can take down Jeepers Creepers, and everyone's like,
never. Today I'll also attest to that. I didn't even watch the last Jeepers Creepers that came out. I think 2 years back. There's a movie that came out 2 years back. I didn't even care because I watched two or three of them. I watched the school bus one about the brother and sister. And I watched the father, the cowboy farmer who was trying to get revenge on the thing that killed his son. So, no, I just went like, nah, I'm done with this movie franchise. I'm really done.
Yeah, go on.
I'm gone from this thing. So, in essence, Helmut, You look at the current situation, governance-wise, politically-wise, and we have a divide. Yes, countries from Egypt to Tunisia to Algeria and Morocco seem stable. But then the countries just below them, and one of them, Libya, are completely unstable. So you've got Sudan, you've got Libya, you've got Mali, because Mali probably is the worst hit against combating terrorism.
Yeah.
And then you've got Burkina Faso and Niger that seem like the best, but Niger, their problem is that Nigeria knows that Niger is sort of like, what do you call that? You know, when someone just uses you as your territory, as I just need to move through your territory. I don't want to stay here. I'm not interested in anything.
Yeah, just passing through.
I'm just passing through. So Nigeria knows, and the world of anti-terrorism know that Niger is a big problem, because what the remnants of Boko Haram do, they attack a village, and this is now all the countries that border onto Nigeria. So it's Niger, it's Cameroon, and I think there is Chad. Yeah, I think it's Chad. Those three countries that border onto Nigeria, they also have Muslim populations, and the downside is when attacks happen, these guys run across the border. Now, you're going to ask me the first question. So how do the Nigerians technically secure their borders, specifically with safe immigration channels, and also looking after infrastructure between themselves and their neighbors? And secondly, how do the countries that seem to harbor these terror elements, what do they do to try to combat terror?
Yeah.
And yes, Donald Trump helped out Nigeria in Christmas or in December with the bombing that we all were like, it's a weird bombing situation. But it didn't stop.
It was a weird one.
But it didn't stop the terror threat. The terror is still there.
Part of the reason why this will be difficult to pull off is two things.
Yeah.
And this is the same thing that we that you see if you just read the history of much of the armed conflicts coming out of Asia.
Yeah.
90% of these wars, including the quote-unquote terrorism that's basically going on, it's for the most part a proxy war between, you know, between one big country that's supporting socialism and one big country that wants to push capitalism. Mm. And these two guys are always clashing thousands of kilometers away from their countries. If you look at North and South Korea, same discussion. North and South Vietnam, same discussion. You have one side that was supported by either China or Russia, and they have one that was supported by Western countries that includes America, the French, the British, and all that. And these guys were always in a clash. One was saying we want to support, you know, to stop the spread of, you know, of communism, and the other was, well, I don't even know why, you know, like how that war is explained in Eastern countries, and that's in China, Russia, because much of the literature exists in their mother language, which is not spoken here.
Yeah.
The only point of view that we seem to get with regards to why most of those wars took place is coming in out of the English speaking countries. Was one of the biggest claim was most of the war was to stop communist this, communist that, communist this, and considering that was, is it Sun Tzu's point of view, is that the first casualty was, did I get that from Call of Duty? The first casualty in a war is the truth. Now, this is the same thing that you see if you look at, I'm not sure about Niger and Mali, but one thing that came out of both the three countries, including Senegal, was that you had a lot of Russian flags flying.
Mm.
Now, again, you are, and you had a lot of, what's that, now dissolved, is it, yeah, the Wagner Group. Wagner Group, they were also very active in that part of Africa. So, for one, you can, you can already see that, to some degree, this is, I don't think the Wagner guys just showed up here. Of course, you can bet that the countries that hosted the Wagner Group and and Russia, especially on the top level of of government, they were in communication. Now, if you call the Russian and say, you know what, I'm dealing with terrorism here, and I've tried the American way, it doesn't seem to work. Do you mind sending me some men? You can easily reach a business deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's one of those things that we don't really want to talk about it, but for the most part, I swear, every conflict that you look at the end of it all, you are going to see you're going to see a proxy war.
Yeah,
you're going to see a proxy war of more communism or socialism on the other, because today it's mostly socialism on the other and capitalism on one hand. Or if you want to look at it the South African way, you can just say EFF versus AfriForum. Policy wise, they are pretty much the same, minus the guns, of course. Only one gun was recorded in that. And it's also went through justice and now 5-year sentence, and everyone is focused on how smoking Malema's wife is. People on TikTok are not serious. Now, the thing is, to pull off bringing the whole African continent under one currency, the first question you have to ask yourself is, how much of us, first of all, understand how the financial world works? Because the financial world is a very discrete one, for one. There's not a lot of negotiation that goes in there.
What?
In the world of finance, especially if you're dealing with currency.
It's negotiations we don't see, Hamid. That's the scary thing.
Exactly.
Because for example, let's look at this. When we did the SADC discussion at the World Bank and IMF meetings, spring meetings. So we saw what Elias Mokgosi was going to do on behalf of SADC. Meeting with SADC ambassadors based in Washington, D.C., talking and participating in panel discussions and plenary discussions at the IMF World Bank meetings. But we don't know what the World Bank and the IMF are telling, for example, the AU, the African Development Bank. We don't know potentially what the EU Central Bank is telling the AU Development Bank. And remember, it's the EU Development Bank giving money to the AU Development Bank. Or we don't know specifically, for example, one of the weird things that I always saw where I realized there's absolutely no way you'll probably know what's being discussed in these meetings was literally with that Orange River discussion between Namibia and South Africa. And then the biannual commission, this commission between Namibia and Botswana. Last year, where the Ministry of International Relations sends out a media invite to ask the media, please come and take photos before the start of the conference. It's a conference that's closed off to us, the media. And please come and take photos after the conference ends. And I'm like, yay. So what are they actually talking about? What is being negotiated? What's on the table? So in essence, Helmut, we don't get to see what's the nitty-gritty. What's the ink on the paper? What are the suggestions being made? And then you go in here, because now you have to hope this biannual commission discussion gets to parliament this year. It gets to parliament.
Mm-hmm.
But like I've told you before, I don't have great hope for the people participating in parliament, because we don't seem to be able to get to the cybersecurity and the data protection bills. We are nowhere close to actually looking at other tangible legislation that aims to improve the lives of Namibians. Because even the discussions around the land bill, for some reason, people were fixated on farming land.
Yeah.
And the actual need for land in Namibia is residential urban. So why are we complaining about farming land outside? But then it should also have been a thing, because it's a very good point up regarding to whom you can sell farmland to is, okay, someone who has a title deed or has a deed to land, commercial, private land, because it's also known as land known, it's also known as land that is freehold or free, not freestanding, but freehold, because the name, the word freehold is an old English or Dutch term, which means the government does not have a right over your land. I'll say it again. The term that was used in the 2018 land conference, when the NSA and NUST's people presented at that 2018 conference, Helmut, they gave presentations around land and the different classifications of land, and there was a word they used, freehold. Freehold means free from any control that the government can exert on the land. That's private commercial land.
Yeah.
Or private farmland, or private land, or commercial farmland, whichever term you want to use, it's that which is owned through a title deed. Now, this ultimately shows anyone, because in the Constitution, it actually protects private property. And private property is a pretty broad term. That's why I asked also, Helmut, when we are looking at this operationalizing of the central bank, what are we looking at? Are we asking the whole 54 member states to now commit to something? And like I told you, there are the three loose cannons in West Africa, Sudan, which is a whole black hole of no information. We are just hearing carnage and devastation. And then we don't know about the stability level of Libya. Even though Gaddafi's, I think his son passed away recently.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I heard something
in
like
last
that.
Month, yeah. The son passed away. Was the guy that also stood in last year for elections, presidential elections. So there's that whole conversation. So we first need to achieve stability, but we are already trying to operationalize something that you can already see, bruh. What currency are we going to use on this continent for that thing?
Look, man, before you even get to the currency, just look at South Africa. One of the biggest discussions that I've had coming out of this is something that's basically taking place in public sphere.
Yeah.
Is the question of who are the shareholders of the South African Reserve Bank? Now, that's one heck of a question. One thing is that the shareholders are basically have remained anonymous for a very long time.
Ask yourself why, Helmut. It is a concern. My perspective is split.
Uh-huh.
I believe a central bank should work in the interests of your government of the day.
Yeah.
And for the various policies that your government wants to achieve.
Uh-huh.
But then I also believe, a central bank should not be politically exposed to the political whims of the government of the day.
That's also a terrible idea.
Because the suggestions someone like Julius Malema have been given was like, dude, I don't think you should be anywhere close to politics. You shouldn't even be the leader of a party. Because what he's technically speaking of is, first and foremost, trying to gain access to someone's assets. He's trying to use the central bank. Much of his conversations were gain access literally to the currency. Gaining access to the currency, you're going to ask a question of, what do you want to do with the currency? The currency is supposed to be this independent standard that reinforces economic activity.
Yeah.
But then, Helmut, when I watched the documentary on the spider's web of the UK central bank, I went like, no way do I want my government to be at the hands or the mercy of something which on paper they say, no, we were the last part of London that survived the William the Conqueror's invasion.
Yeah.
And everyone will ask you, what?
When was that? That's the first question.
What?
That was before the dinosaurs roamed the earth.
And guess what?
Yeah.
The people who live... It's most the story of the two Londons.
Yeah.
That's most the one chapter in that documentary. The story of the two Londons. So you've got the city of London, which is London around this area, the financial district of London.
Yeah.
And then you've got London City.
Basically, they just swap the words.
Yeah. So London City is where the Bank of England is based. That piece of land, it's like a block of the city. So specifically a block.
Yeah.
That piece of land, Helmut, is autonomous from the government of the United Kingdom. Let me say it again. Your financial district, a piece of land.
Wait, that's their
central bank. Is autonomous from the whole country.
So their central bank is basically private. You know, it does its operations privately from the country it's supposed to represent.
From the country whose money it's running. So let me ask you the question, Helmut. Where did economists get this idea that central banks must be independent, but still dependent upon the economy? Where does this brand, this whack idea come from?
Okay, so
it is whack.
Okay, let me get this straight. So you have a bank that's basically running the currency
of the
country that it's somewhat jurisdictional speaking, it's immune from.
Yes.
What the heck?
It's making decisions for a country that it technically...
That country can't basically hold it accountable.
Yes. Think of it also in a sense of...
That's way too much power. It's making decisions
without taking responsibility.
That's way too much power.
It's way too much power. It's way too much secrecy that you're allowing.
You can only imagine... look, one thing about secrecy is... secrecy is good. If you look at, pilots, for example, the reason why they don't tell you everything as it happens is because you just freak out and they won't be able to focus on, on the bigger picture, which is landing the plane and keeping everyone safe.
Yeah.
In that way, secrecy is safe. But, over secrecy is also very dangerous, especially in that case, because, if I'm at the top of an organization that has that level of secrecy, I know there are a lot of things I can get away with.
Yes, Amor. That's what we're literally talking about here. Now, South Africa doesn't have the same level of
secrecy.
Of independence, let me rather say that, because you highlighted the shareholders.
Because
I kept frowning, who's the shareholders of South Africa, of the South African Reserve
Bank? Oh, you also asked yourself the same question.
And the media reports I continuously look at don't answer my question. Who owns the South African Reserve Bank? But the South African Reserve Bank, the Bank of Namibia follows the South African Reserve Bank's movements, applications of fiscal policy.
Yeah.
No, monetary policy, because fiscal is Ministry of Finance. BON's monetary policy is aligned to the SARB's monetary policy. If they're making an announcement this week, the
BON is going to follow suit.
They're going to make an announcement next week or the day after. So we sit in this conundrum of, okay, so the South Africans are fighting constitutional issues around their monetary policy.
Okay, what's going on here? Can we just...
And that was one of the questions Malema wanted answered. He asked, who are these hidden shareholders? Who are these people? Who are these entities? Now, it obviously piques interest.
Yeah.
But then... The suggestions as to why he's asking this question is a question where Malema must be so, okay, brah, go sit at the back. You asked your question.
Thank you very much.
Don't motivate the question.
Yeah, please don't.
Don't motivate the question. Just go sit at the back, please. In your red jumper.
When you know your homie.
When your overalls, just go sit at the back, please.
Thank you very much. Let's just focus on this question.
Yeah, let's focus on your question.
You keep the motivation.
Keep your motivation to yourself. Because we will all just be suspicious. Because... Yeah. After his brother or his cousin was implicated in the VBS bank scandal.
Oh, yeah, that one. Yeah, like a SME, but for South Africa.
No.
What?
The SME bank did send money to VBS.
No, I'm saying scandal-wise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the question that is also not being answered by the South Africans is, those guys that were shoveling in the money from VBS, was it also SME bank money? And then the conversation just ends there.
Yeah.
So, he's also not holier than thou.
Definitely not. Considering the current circumstances.
Well, he planned it, Hamut. He's not innocent. The court, when the judge said, you proved planning for the celebrations to have an AK-47 that you are claiming is a toy gun,
but you were firing live rounds.
Live ammunition.
That is not a toy gun. That is not a toy gun. An assault rifle is not a toy gun.
I don't think there's a way you can look at the question of that's a toy gun or not. That whole debate. You know, there's no answer that you
it's
can...
It's not even a snatch movie from Guy Ritchie.
No, look...
Where they were running around with replicas.
Look, if you ask, did you think this was a toy gun? If he says, whether he says yes or no, there's no good answer out of that. If he says yes, then we're like, okay, no, so this sentence should go on. If he says no, then I'm like, so... If you can't tell the difference between a toy gun and a real gun, what are you doing in Parliament?
Who are you trying to lie to?
Yeah, like, now. You see, the whole, London City example that you gave, and the, now, is still a burning question with regards to the ownership of the South African Central Bank, of which our bank basically is still a conjoined twin. Politically, we have been separated, but financially and, you know, commercially, we are still very much connected. Yeah. Again, it's an awesome thing. The thing is, when you're talking about, transparency and secrecy to the level of having a financial institution that's running a country's money, but that country has limited reach in terms of holding this.
It is free from all laws.
What? And who just sat and thought that was a brilliant idea?
I think the random king at the day of 13 or 12 something or 11. Whenever William the Conqueror decided to invade his cousin's piece of farmland known as England back then.
Okay, look, if your justification has William the Conqueror in it,
yes,
that's already one big problem. It's like me saying, you know what, the only reason I'm doing this is, and then I give an explanation, and in that explanation is Adolf Hitler. Everyone will go like, you're not helping your case here, buddy.
No, you're definitely.
No, you're not.
Like the socialists primarily, and people who are calling for modern day communism, what they don't realize is that it's technically you are losing the right to freedom of expression and the freedom of self.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing. If you look at the secrecy that banking is embedded in, it wasn't until last year when I learned the mother of all central banks is based in Switzerland, the Bank of International Settlement.
Mm.
Basically, this is...
It's not a UN body?
I don't think it is.
But it's an IMF, World Bank affiliated entity. It's affiliated to them.
And is it public or private?
Well, Elwood, anything goes, you know.
Now,
in this world of finance, people make up rules and you're just like, okay.
The world of finance is shrouded in mystery.
Yeah, they're so, your best buddies, Switzerland.
Oh, yeah. They are. Now, if you just look at, all you just have to do is read the history of Credit Suisse. Oh, those guys made a lot of money for Switzerland. And the country itself, its history in terms of keeping things very safe.
Yeah.
It will take you back to Second World War when they kept gold very safe for yours truly, the Führer. Now, the thing is, homeboy...
Can we just stick to our old name, the failed Austrian painter? Because now you're going with too many of his names, his known names, and I'm like, eish.
You know what?
Somebody will go and buy his book. Because there's one random guy that decided on YouTube to go and read his full book, and he was like, now I understand what's going on in the modern age. I'm like, hey,
I thought you learned this in history.
No, man, look, the thing is, the world of finance, infrastructure on its own, there's not a lot of infrastructure that's basically that the global finance runs on.
Yeah.
For the most part, it's been infrastructures like your SWIFT, for example, which is controlled, made and governed by the Western world. And it wasn't until the war between February 2022 with Russia and Ukraine exchanging greetings in well informed of bombs That's when it, you know, you had much of the world talking about finding an alternative, because you now saw that, okay, you know what, maybe this SWIFT institution is being weaponized here. And that has to do with, now, irrespective of where you stand on the Russia-Ukraine conflict, you have to look at it from a wider diplomatic relations standpoint. Mm. That, now, if SWIFT, which is being operated by the US, is now, is being used against, you know, is being used against, against Russia, every country that was using this infrastructure now, they were asking themselves one question. So, and the question was, so, if I go against these guys, this is what they're going to do to my country's finance, and I'm cooked.
Or if you probably get a tin pot leader like Donald Trump going, and he decides, you know what, everybody gets tariffs.
Yeah.
Plus, and we suspend your banking system, and you're like, why? Why are you doing this?
Exactly. So now you have a lot of countries like China working on alternatives. Now China has the expertise, the hardware, the software. They can build it. Can we say the same for Africa?
Definitely not, Helmut.
There's one African guy, I think he's Kenyan, who just scared the Moses out of me when he asked a very simple question that, if any African country find itself in a situation that Iran is right now, what are we gonna do? I'm like, hey, dude, you didn't have to make a video about this. We were all asking ourselves this question, but in silence. Mm. Yeah. First of all, there's no way we are going to find ourselves in a situation like Iran because, first of all, we are shipping the uranium way out. And
very,
also,
very far.
Way out. You know, in its raw form to make sure that we are not enriching any of it. And also, if you look at, I'm just looking at the leadership across the corner and I'm going like, I wouldn't trust most of these guys with a pistol, let alone a nuclear football.
I mean, Hamoud, let me give you an example about level of trust. Even though we as Namibians, we are pretty open-minded in whoever we work with and whoever approaches us, since Namibia is now hot property for this first half of 2026, we've now been hot property in international relations.
Yeah.
So last week I went to another circular economy engagement, and this was a circular economy engagement. I spoke to David this morning on his show regarding this particular engagement, and ultimately what were some of the goals or objectives and discussion levels taking place. So the event was organized local partners, EIF, which is the Environmental Investment Fund, and UNAM. And then they had a Pan-African partner known as SEPREC. SEPREC stands for Circular Economy Renewable, circular economy, something, something center at the end. Let me just end there. SEPREC has its roots in the English-speaking African countries, except for Sierra Leone and for Rwanda. Rwanda is now trying to move over to an Anglophone scenario, even though they still have much of their business done in French, and much of the national language is technically French. But Rwanda is now trying to actively participate in the Commonwealth discussion for most Commonwealth countries, which are predominantly English-speaking. Sierra Leone is also French-speaking, but it's also participating in a Commonwealth perspective, which is an English-speaking scenario. The discussion that popped up there, Hamoud, from the first panel discussion that I waited for, okay, we had to wait for like 2 hours. I won't say why. I'm not going to embarrass people here live on air. But we had to wait before the whole thing began, which was 2 hours later. And the first panel discussion after the main speeches began in this, the one guy is asked, and he's a Brit, he's an Englishman, and he's asked, you know, what did you see over the, because this event was taking place while there was like a 4-day conferencing that UNAM was hosting regarding circular economy. One of the things that what happened was they were taken across various important sites in Namibia for recycling, reusing, reducing, repurposing of materials and other stuff. The guy says Namibia has many strengths. And he was surprised to see what the Finnish are going to roll out from our first circular economy discussion.
Yeah.
What the Finnish are going to roll out. And much of what I heard from the other panelists who were either visiting people for the week, where they were citing, you know, but Namibia has got a lot of things going for it already. There's a lot of things running in full steam. A lot of the developments are already on the block or in the starting lanes, or they're already in the channel or pipelines for approval, further drafting, correction, heading off to a legislative scenario, stuff like that, which made me feel proud as Namibia. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we began in 2021 and everybody was scratching their heads about what the hell is green hydrogen and all this other funny stuff. But you know what? We've been seeing tangible results, Helmut. Now, here's the discussion that popped up. Many of the visiting academics that came with from the other African countries cited things are not as advanced as in their countries as it is in Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
They're not. For example, remember the urban, the AU Urban Forum, second urban forum, the one that we covered that was held in Nairobi. They were talking about topics, subject matter, discussions, where unfortunately in Namibia's case, Namibia already has a template where advanced planning had taken place. Meaning you just build from where
you already laid the foundation.
Yeah, the town's already there. The road, the national road infrastructure already leads there. The railway infrastructure you've got is 100 plus years old. It already leads there. You just need to build from it. So this then starts making things in Namibia's developmental planning a lot easier.
Yeah.
But how does Nairobi deal with having the label of owning the world's, Africa's largest slum? It's not even an informal area, Owens. It's a slum.
What's the difference, though?
A lot more people, I'd say.
And plastic flying off.
And severe deprivations of service provision. Severe. I'll say at Helmut again, severe levels. To me, it also sounds that the population density that Kenya has seems that Kenya also just has two major cities, Mombasa and Nairobi. I thought they probably would have had like at least four or five like South Africa. Even like Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe is probably at a better level than Kenya as well. Because Zimbabwe has Bulawayo, has Harare. There's another city. It's a town actually, but it's a city-ish situation where you can see they just need to build up from this level again. And I mean, what's happening in the other parts of Africa? Now ask yourself once again. So the plan by 2026, by September this year, is that all the central banks have to send staff to make this African Central Bank a reality. Now, a central bank, Herman, a central bank, which I asked you at the start, will be in charge of a currency. I am very afraid of whatever currency pops up.
And guess who offers up the space to, you know, for the, Africa Monetary Institute.
Yeah.
Nigeria, just like, you know what, here is a space, you can just use this as a headquarter, you know. Okay, that's interesting. The discussion of money is a big one on the African continent.
Mm.
It's the reason why we have a bunch of foreign military installations on the African continent. One of the many reasons, one of them, like I pointed out earlier, being security. And when you talk about money again, when it comes to the, like, just the day-to-day operations of the African Union, the contributions are a major discussion.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have member states that are just on a free ride.
I know why you say that, because at the start of and it's probably our other discussion.
Yeah.
At the start of the document of the decisions. There's, if it's even on our planner, contributions of member states to the AU. If you've read that section,
you will hear that there is like an appeal. They're writing, we recognize, guys, that not all of us have paid. Please, those of you that have not paid, and the heads of state are sitting there in that crowd, you know, could you kindly do your, you know, just do your part, you know? Literally. Pay your membership fee.
Every initiative that you are going to come up with is going to require funding.
Yeah.
And that's the same for you and me. It's the same for a group of 5-10 people. It's the same for a country. So it's the same for a continent. Everything that we are going to come up with is going to require money.
Yeah.
So the African Union has that very same problem of, you know, it's heavily, heavily reliant for the most part, especially if you just look at the financing of the African Union's history. It has been for an extended period of time heavily reliant on donor funding.
It still is.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
It still is. And now you have an organization that's reliant on donor funding. They want to establish a center of...
The headquarters was built by another country. I don't know why we could have not just given the money and said...
Two things. The headquarters was paid for and built.
That's why I said, Helmut, we could have given the money and then the building could have taken place. No matter who it was. Mara... That piece of architecture. You know what I always like, Helmut? And I'll share this in terms of Pan-African identity. What I do like about us Africans is that we've got a unique identity. And it doesn't matter what skin color you are. It's the same thing for Namibia as well.
Yeah.
Which is one of the other sort of like disheartening things when tourists come to Namibia and then tourists come and expect a homogeneity present in the country.
Yeah.
Namibia can never be homogenous.
I don't think there is a country that will be homogenous. Because no, you'll find a lot of different peoples in terms of politics, religion, ideologies, so.
No, but there is a few.
How many?
Except for Russia.
Russia is massive.
Russia has got...
By land mass and ethnicities and...
Yeah, and...
Basically everything.
And that's a thing that I did not know about Russia. Russia is not homogenous in society. China is also not homogenous in society. Yeah.
India is not.
Japan is. Homogeneous. The United States, unfortunately, is homogeneous.
Is it though?
Well, they might have a very large third group of Spanish-speaking Americans.
Yeah.
But you just have to identify the minorities, and then you have to look at what level of equal rights do they enjoy. And these are some of the problems that you sometimes encounter from a European perspective. I'm not European, but I'm talking about what the Europeans come and tell you. They come and assume, Helmut, you probably are from one or other specific ethnic group in Namibia. And then you have to correct them every time. And then I got such an answer, me and another guy, when we did our Mandarin classes at UNAM back in 2016. The guy that I know that sat with me in that class, because it was just the two of us that day. The other people decided to bunk class. And then the tutor asked us, so why are you guys here? You guys are very professional. She even complimented us and we told her, listen, it's because we understand that we are paying. It's a $750 that we had to pay that time, but we told her,
The semester?
Yeah, for the whole semester.
Okay.
750. And we said, yeah, look, the 750 might not seem as much, but to us, we want to enjoy every dollar of that 750. Uh-huh. So we're going to be here for every lesson. Even if I'm going to come late, I'm going to be here.
I'm going to be here.
So he and I sat and then she asked us, are you of this particular ethnicity in Namibia? And we laughed at her and we told her no. Namibia has so many number of ethnic groups.
Ethnic groups, yeah.
And so many number of local languages. Technically, according to what was the guy's name that I recorded the other time last year? The guy of the indigenous languages NGO. Yeah, it starts with an F. That guy explained they discovered that there's technically 50 languages in Namibia. Instead of just the 13, 14 that we've got. We've got almost one more than South Africa.
Yeah.
But South Africa calls all its languages national languages. They all have similar national status.
Yeah.
So that means when a Zulu guy walks in, Hamud, he can speak Zulu to you. your shop. He can speak Zulu to you.
When it comes to that confusion, I've come across, I've come to learn that a lot of us Namibians, including yours truly here, don't know how many, like, subdivision of, basically, and subdivision is not actually the correct language to use, because these are, I know that the commonly used term is dialects.
Mm.
These are just independent languages on their own.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, the point I'm trying to make is you can classify them as independent languages on their own. Every time I tell people that I'm a Kavango, Ngapi is the first thing that comes in my mind. Mm. And I tell them, okay, yeah. And now the thing is with, the Kwangali Giriku and Sambyu, mm. I can understand them, but I can't respond. So, I'll just listen to what they're saying and then respond in English. Mm. Their reactions has always been the same. I thought you said, Kavango, yes, I am. What I speak, it's Timbukush. What you are speaking is, what you are greeting me in is Rukwangari.
Your language.
Yeah. Now, I know that, Rukwangari is a predominant language that's spoken in Rundu. So a lot of people that have been exposed to Rundu, when you tell them you're from Kavango, that's the first thing that pops up there.
Everyone automatically thinks,
yeah,
that
you
is
are a language speaking person. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I've also, and then, after going through that experience, then I realized that, I don't know how many dialects are spoken in the Oshiwambo umbrella. I don't know how many languages are spoken in the Zambezi region, because there are a lot of different languages that are also spoken. I know you have the Yeis, the Mafwe, you have the Subia.
And then there's a language that all of them speak.
Yeah. Now,
there's not a group that owns the language.
Now, wait, which one is that one?
I think it's the Masubia language.
Really?
They speak apparently their mother tongue. Ask Franz. Franz explained it to me. I was like, are you sure, Franz?
That's odd.
No. Well, I also had a caller here live on air back in 2022 who said, listen, Dwight, we all speak this one common language, but no one owns the language. I'm like,
where did you get the language?
You import it from somewhere. Now, because they are Bantu languages,
yeah,
they have a lot of words that they share.
Yeah.
So, even if they're speaking, when someone is speaking, any of the languages coming out of the northern regions, basically the entire northern region.
Yeah.
I can pick up a lot of those words.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's responding. That's a problem. Last time I tried that, one friend of mine, she was speaking Suvia. My response mixed Suvia and my response was a cocktail, dude. And now everyone started laughing. Like, what the heck are you saying? That's why I stopped responding. Look, my response was a cocktail. Take for example, if someone came to me speaking a specific, dialect or coming out with the Shuambo umbrella, I'm most likely going to pick up like 70 to 80% of the conversation.
Mm.
Yeah, but responding now. Oh, now that respond again is going to be a cocktail and everyone is going to be laughing. So I was like, you know what? No more responding. Yeah, so the classification of all the languages as languages, they are standalone languages instead of what we refer to them these days as dialects.
Mm.
If you classify Namibian language that way, you'll find out that, oh boy, do we have more than just 13 or 14 or how many of them that we count. Now, let's get back to the African Union's money discussion, because I think for an extended period of time, it's just going to be a discussion. Oh, boy. So, on the side of the 39th ordinary session of the African Union Assembly that took place in February, and this took place on the 14th and 15th most. Now, on the 15th, they ran something they called a side event. On the side of the main event being the 39th ordinary session.
Yeah.
And that side event, that side event. Hang on a second. I have that here. The side event was themed advancing the operationalization of the African Monetary Institute through advocacy and awareness. And then you just go all the way to the first paragraph under objectives. The overall objective of the side event is to raise awareness and advocate for establishment and the operationalization of the African Monetary Institute as a key milestone towards African Central Bank and continental single currency.
Yeah, we cooked, Helmut. We are cooked.
Which I was like...
I saw when you sent me that thing just before we stepped in.
And should then I was like, trade first?
And I was like, these guys are trying to jump the gun. Whose central bank is not going to be? What are we going to do? What, are we going to link this to all the gold reserves on Africa?
Oh, man, now you're making it worse.
Huh? Are we going to link this to all the oil reserves in Africa? Because guess what? The Sudanese are busy blowing up their gold and oil.
You know what? So you are going to link it to the extractive industry.
The whole continent?
No, you see,
and you've got the three loose cannons hanging there.
Just the extractive industry is one big problem. Now the fact that much of the extractive industry that the African economy depends on is not, is being run by predominantly foreign multinational. So the entire thing is going to be private.
Yeah.
Look, you and I can run the African Union. Look.
No, we're not even going to get through the front door. What are you talking?
How are they even talking about these things?
Do you know that they will ship me to Palermo?
Why?
Tell me, hey, listen, because you are rah-rahing here too much, we don't like your face.
Now, that document, it's the document of decisions that took me to that side event website of the African Union. Now that's when I basically connected it to what I found on page 121 of the where this whole central bank, African Central Bank discussion on the decisions document is coming from. And you just have to scroll until your fingers hurt.
Yeah.
Right. Now that is on page 122. The initial assembly, now you have that to motivate. There's a part where they're congratulating Mauritius, but not part of that. I know. Further appeal, yeah. Appeal, no, it's on page 121. Yeah. That's number five. Further appeals is to member states to allocate the necessary resources through their central banks in order to ensure the Africa Monetary Institute has sufficient funding to commence operation by September 2026.
Now, here's the concern, Hamoud. Here's another concern. The speakers they had at that side event, the one person or the one lady, she was the Commissioner for Economic Development, Trade, Tourism, Industry and Minerals from the AU Commission. And the other person was a guy who is the Minister of Finance from the Kingdom of Eswatini, who's also the chairperson of the Specialized Technical Committee on Finance, Monetary Affairs, Economic Planning and Integration for the AU. And the last speaker was another lady who is the governor of the Bank of Central African States, who's also the chairperson of the Association of African Central Banks. Let me say this again. The first label, the governor of the Bank of Central African States, is a neighborhood club. Central Africa. They've got a common currency situation there. Then, she's also the chairperson of the Association of African Central Banks. Now, let's properly look at who went and said what regarding Africa and its goal to have a central bank. So, Kingdom of Eswatini runs around with South African rand. You don't have to hold your breath, Helmut. That's their currency. Kingdom of Eswatini runs around with South African rand.
They don't have their own currency with the king on it.
I doubt it, because, I mean, if he's the one owning everything and he's got 50 wives, what do you expect to be owned? I'll say it again. They run around with South African rand.
Okay.
They're also in SACU.
Yeah.
So why is a member of SACU going and championing something if said member did not clear it first with the collective?
Well, it's I would assume African Union decision triumphs regional decisions like ECOWAS and SADC.
But if SADC's discussion, Helmut, is more grounded on actual results than trying to sort out boardroom meetings and boardroom targets.
Yeah.
Because this central bank is a boardroom target.
Yeah.
It's not an operation. It's not an actual installation target. It's not about saying, hey, Namibia, give up your Namibian dollar. Hey, South Africa, give up your South African rand. It wants to achieve that level, but it can't actually come in and convince us. That's the reason why I'm saying one of the speakers is a minister of finance who probably is not financing enough for his king, for his country, because, you know, they're a kingdom and they're pretty small, and unfortunately they're in SACU. Now go and ask yourself, who is the bank, the Central African nations, what's this label again? This woman is the governor of the Bank of Central African States. So this means this is a collective of countries, a collection of countries.
In Central African region.
In Central African region. So this means, Hamoud, they're also a customs union. They're also a customs union. And the other particular person comes from the AU Commission. Now, Rakenberg, who's the Minister of Finance from Eswatini, it doesn't say here he's representing SADC or SACU. It just says that he's the chairperson of the Specialized Technical Committee of the AU's Finance, Monetary Affairs, Economic Planning and Integration. Now I ask you, Helmut, when we've got to extensively look at this particular talking point, what are we telling the World Bank and the IMF people? So we send the three, I don't want to say the three smallest, three smallest guys, but we send the three, you know, we send three people to go and say something about
SADC's integration into the,
about a single currency. Namibia is busy exploring a digital currency variant. This AU thing is not even on the ground. We don't even know where the head office will be based.
The thing is...
Is the office even built? Is this once again another tender that was given?
Someone will have to, you know...
That gave the money and decided to build? Like the headquarters itself?
The African Union was China. This is finance. This is in the financial sphere of things. I'm guessing either China or
the EU.
The EU or probably the US. Now, considering who's in the White House, let's just stick to China and the EU.
Yeah, there's no hope, guys. There's literally no hope.
Yeah, someone just woke up and thought the best way to open a blocked strait is to block it even more.
Have you seen that meme where it goes like, in the words of Ein Trump? It's two pictures of Trump and the hair of Einstein merged together.
Oh yeah,
and it goes like, block equals unblock. I was like, what?
Genius.
Who made this meme? Block equals unblock.
The theory of general relativity converted the fear of straights.
Oh,
don't
my
play with Donald Trump. And 29 into the hour of 5, gentlemen. This is still Home Run. We're just laughing at, well, the African Union's, I think we have the cat in front of the horse here because we're supposed to sort out trade first.
Look, it's one of the agendas for 2063. It's one of the items having.
Okay, why is trade
continental economic?
Why are we pushing trade to 2063, but establishing a financial institution of the money we more like the resources to back it up with? It's in the hands of foreign multinational corporations. That's taking. We have to get that done ASAP, like by September 2026.
Okay, the nice thing here, Hamoud, is that they use the sentence there. Let me just read it for you. The why. I like it. I sometimes like it how people write their motivational documents. The why. So they say the establishment of the Africa Monetary Institute, the AMI, recently adopted by AU heads of state and government, marks a key milestone towards creating the African Central Bank and a future single currency. Now I can breathe a little bit. A sigh of relief. Because I thought this currency is going to pop up here in 2027.
Future.
Okay, so the word future is like next century. So
next century. Whoa. Oh, but you're right though. Time
next century. I mean, let's just bounce it there like a nice cricket shot that you play. You know, you just bounce it there.
Yeah.
So next century. Okay, not next. Let me get rid of next century.
Oh, it's definitely going to be next century.
This particular pathway has to indicate to anyone. Okay. Once again, I get back to the peace, the stability, the concrete, solid, positive developments across the continent. All 54 member states being peaceful, looking after their citizens, implementing their national policies of development and upliftment and so on and so forth, in order to achieve heightened standards of living and industrial development. We have to first look at these things being in place.
Mm-hmm.
So technically, I am negating my previous statement, Helmut. The previous statement where I said we sent, not saying three short people or three small people, we sent three people to go and talk about a currency discussion where you're like, brah, but your country's running around with rand. And we don't know who you are. You're a collective of countries. That means nobody trusts anybody with money. And who are you? That's what's now. I'm describing technically the governor of Central Bank of African, of Central African. What is this label again, Dochman? Who comes up with these things? So, the Bank of Central African States. Let me see. Who is the central bank? So we sit with a conundrum, Helmut, about, okay, we're sending three people whose countries are not known for banking. I'll say it again. Even the Ghanaians have got better banking than these three representatives that we sent to talk about Africa. And this is also a scenario, Helmut, about how we look at regional integration or continental integration or, regional and continental in terms of being achieving the particular developmental targets that Africa has set for itself. So Africa's overall target, Helmut, is not 2030 like the SDGs.
Mm-hmm.
Africa's overall target is Vision
2063.
Yeah, agenda. So it's technically, why did they select 63? It's an odd number.
2063.
It's an odd number.
Yep.
It's actually an odd number. Who came up with that number? I'll have to go read up again, Ahmed. But anyway, so Agenda 2063, which is literally, where are we now? 37 years from now.
Yep.
Almost 40 years from now. Hopefully I've moved on with life. And transcend it into another spiritual realm of...
Don't worry, you're going to be 80.
I don't hope so, Helmut, because I don't want hip replacements. But anyway...
Titanium.
So when we look at this situation,
it's indestructible. Why would we not want it?
When we look at the situation past, you know, my oncoming, you know, seniority. I made up another word. Seniority. When we look at this particular template, I understand and I agree. Get the ball rolling. Just like with the what they call that thing? The thing we did last week? The force, the task force? No? The intervention force? No, oh, the response. That army. Africa. The African response force or something. The African army.
Yeah, I know. It had a name.
It had a very special name. It's the same thing that we've got to look at, Helmut. Meaning, you are right. You gave rise to one particular important point. Let's first boost the trade between each other.
Yep.
Let's first travel to each other's countries to support each other's tourism economies. But it also means we, as member nations of the AU, we've got to invest. Now, this does not mean we want all the people from Liberia suddenly now becoming immigrants to Namibia. Hamut, do you know that in Liberia they don't have newspapers?
Why? That's spelling a lot of...
I almost used the word poverty, but they don't have that level of investment going around in their country. And Liberia is Africa's oldest independent country.
Yeah.
Liberia still, till this day, does not have newspapers. They don't have a printing press.
For the whole country?
And this is based off of a...
Both in public and private sector?
A documentary I watched of a guy who decided he's going to become like the corner... What are those guys that they had in medieval Europe? The guys that stood on the soapbox and were announcing things.
Hmm.
So all he would do was listen to radio broadcasts of the local national radio.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would write it down for people.
But they do have radio.
They do have radio. They probably do have TV. But,
just newspaper.
But from this...
And that's intentional.
Would it be intentional? Or is it something based upon investment in education?
I mean, they have radio.
Because one of the most key things that would have happened if you're a country that has such an old heritage like Liberia, is you would have invested in reading and writing. And then you would have cultivated an information or a knowledge, or let me rather say a knowledge-seeking or a curious nation, meaning they don't care. If you put it on the radio or on the TV, they would still buy books, they would buy newspapers, they would support such things. Even Iceland has... culture of reading. And the Icelandics, do you know what are their Christmas gifts? They don't celebrate the level of capitalistic Christmas we have here in Namibia, where your favorite girlfriend might be angry at you because you didn't buy her
a tree.
A tree and the
with LED.
And potentially
capitalism really did a number on us.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've tried running away from it for 4 years, and my family members were angry. Even the dogs were angry at me. They were like, dude.
Where the heck were you?
Dude, at least cook something. And you're like, but all these ingredients, it's $100 of ingredients goes into one dish.
Yeah.
It's going to be eaten in one day.
Uh-huh.
Just think it over, Helmut.
Yeah, that's why it has become, the painful thing is we have made it standard to be broke in January, just because of that.
Which is true, because do you know what they celebrate? Do you know what they measure in the UK immediately after New Year's Day?
Yeah,
I remember this as clear as daylight back in 2008. I sat there, you know, like any broke student does at home, watching international news. And I came across Sky News the day right. It was literally in January.
Yeah,
because I was waiting for the registration period to go back to university.
Yeah,
and. I think it's the central bank in the UK, the Bank of England, comes out with a report saying so many Britons are declared financially, no? So many Britons are declared personally bankrupt because of Christmas. No?
is it personal insolvency or personal bankruptcy? Helmut, just because of Christmas, one day and New Year's Day, you must now bankrupt yourself. Every year, it's a vicious cycle of taking your money that you saved up the whole year. If you could save.
Yeah.
If you could save. You can. If you could save. So it's a vicious cycle. Now, that is, you know, capitalism on steroids. That's on steroids. Because you will go to church, you come back, you're eating the food that you just bought, and it's done. Now, ask yourself this other particular question. How can a country like Iceland celebrate Christmas, but a tradition that they've developed nationally? Out of the 500,000 people that Iceland have, yes, I know, guys, Iceland can fit into Windhoek.
Oh, yeah, it can.
It can. And it'll be only be one of Windhoek's neighborhoods, even. The whole of Iceland, their custom is giving each other a book that you wrote the whole year, Helmut, to give to the person that you want to give a book to. A self-published book.
What's that book about?
Whatever story you want to tell.
Oh, that's interesting.
Whatever story you tell.
So just write a book and...
And that's the gift. You publish it, you print it, and you hand it to the person. You make one copy. You hand it to the person that you want to give the book. You want to provide a gift to.
What's a...
Storytelling.
What gift is better than that?
It's an awesome template. Now imagine if you did that to your Namibian wife or girlfriend.
First of all,
I'm dumping you, George.
You'll be part of the divorce statistics that way. Interestingly yeah, enough, just
divorced on
in 2
January.
Yeah.
When government opens,
mm-hmm.
I'll be divorced on 2 January or I'll be dumped on 27 December, which is not a public holiday. On my way to work, even. I know. Our world is vicious, Helmut.
Jeez, quick break.
Yeah.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the only person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipura nengeno wapubwa eva tele ulikoni maondo deto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa nyinge kwa tafanona Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile konderewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Malino tatu tatu oma feleane Eagle FM the eye. That's the only part I had. 17 minutes to the hour of 6. We're still on the subject of why we seem to have the cart in front of the horse in terms of planning Africa's economic growth. Because if you ask me, focusing on the FCFTA would be a brilliant idea now. And just, focus, on integration in terms of physical infrastructure so we can, you know, visit each other's country and trade with each other for products that goes beyond salt. Now that's for Namibia and Nigeria. Like, the question is, what happens when they start having their own salt and they're like, you know what, we have ours now. And I like to point that out because we do it, all the time to South Africa. You know what? Our local farmers have produced this product cultivated a lot of it. So for this period of time, we are not going to import it.
Yeah, I now discovered, Helmut, who the Bank of Central African States is.
Like the headquarters?
It's based in Yaoundé, Cameroon. Its members are Cameroon, Central African Republic, Chad, Equatorial Guinea, Gabon, and the other Congo, the one across the river.
Brazzaville.
Yeah. And I remember back in 2021, Central African Republic, the president of Central African Republic, because of the violence that and the damage and destruction that happened in its country, in his country, he used for a limited period of time Bitcoin for payments to be made, for basic commercial activity to take place in his economy, in CAR. And just to recognize that this particular bank serves as the central bank for 6 Central African countries, which form the Economic Monetary Community of Central Africa. I'll say it again. They form or serve as the Central African. They form the Economic and Monetary Community of Central Africa.
Jeez.
Yeah. It is astonishing, primarily because this bank has its roots since 1920, when the French government expanded the note issuance privilege of the Banque de l'Afrique Occidentale to its Central African colonies of the Congo, Ubangi-Shari, Gabon, Chad, and later on Cameroon. Cameroon was obviously at that stage before 1920, a German colony. This arrangement was disrupted, obviously, because of World War II, and as the colonies controlled by the Free France became the Free French Africa. This means that the Caisse Centrale de la France Libre was established in London. This is a specific kind of an entity. This was known as the Central Bank of Free France. It was a bank of issue established in London in 1941, and it served French Equatorial Africa and Cameroon. And it had a regional currency. And it was renamed to another name, Caisse Centrale de France de Outre-mer. And this was as the region's currency was later on standardized in the late 1945. As the CFA franc.
Which is the current currency.
So, wasn't ECOWAS also supposed to have rolled out a currency that the Nigerians didn't like, the ECOWAS dollar?
Oh, yeah.
The other day, because the other ECOWAS members also used a CFA franc. The one that was linked to the euro. Mm-hmm. So this brings in major problematic areas, Helmut. This already brings in major problematic scenarios and areas. Because yes, there are already templates of integrated financial systems, but not integrated trade or commercial systems. SADC, like I explained at the start of our discussion, is trying to achieve integrated economic.
Yep.
An integrated economic scenario. So what happens is specifically if you increase trade, travel, and all other commercial activity who's the furthest? Okay, Angola, technically on the west coast of Africa. From Angola to Mauritius.
Ew.
That is the level of economic integration that SADC wants. The highest being Seychelles is not in SADC, I think. Oh, I'm speaking under correction. I think Seychelles is in SADC. But Seychelles is so far away from us.
It's an island nation.
It's an island nation. It's an archipelago. I think it's an archipelago nation. Yeah. Seychelles is literally across. Is that Ethi? Is that? Yeah. That's literally, they're literally across Nairobi. Literally across Kenya. That's how far they are. So the highest eastwards, the furthest eastwards of Seychelles, which is Seychelles, is that they're literally across from Kenya. Yeah, Seychelles is across Kenya. Okay, in a straight line, because Tanzania, which is also a member of SADC, Tanzania borders onto Kenya, but it seems like they're more in line with Kenya and Tanzania. So we then have another particular subject matter that needs to be addressed here.
Yeah.
Okay. SADC has this inclusivity approach, meaning SADC loves this, hey, let's have a nice big collection of us countries and nations. And, you know, let's be one happy family, you know. We try to achieve common goals. We try to maintain peace and security as best as we can, with the exceptions, obviously, of Mozambique, Madagascar, and DRC. Two French-speaking and one Portuguese-speaking. But is Burundi also in SADC? I forgot.
Burundi, yeah.
Yeah, Burundi is also French-speaking. Yeah, it makes things... Yeah, Burundi is most south of Rwanda. Yo, Burundi is small, yo. How much Burundi is tiny? Yo, Burundi is tiny. Etosha is as big as Burundi. I'm sorry, if you're from Burundi, I'm really sorry, I apologize. It seems like Etosha is literally the size of Burundi. No, man. This is tiny. Rwanda's just as big as Etosha. Helmut. Oh, no, I'm lying. Okay, they're slightly bigger than Etosha, but Etosha takes up 50%. If you put Etosha, if you superimpose Etosha into Burundi or Rwanda, it'll take 50% of both countries.
Basically, Etosha times 2 is Burundi.
Yeah.
Some of us, I don't think most of us understand just how big Namibia is by landmass compared to a lot of African countries.
Nope, we don't.
It turns out it's massive.
Uganda is tiny against us. Uganda is literally Karas.
Yeah, Uganda is also small.
Cameroon is half of us. Yeah. Okay, Eswatini is literally commas. I mean, we don't even have to lie about things here. Eswatini is literally commas. And Lesotho is literally Erongo. I'm sorry if you're from both countries. I know you get, you know, we might have listeners from there. I'm really sorry. But you guys are tiny.
You have to be specific, tiny by landmass. You know, my gender will misinterpret that and take things personal.
Huh?
Nothing. Go on.
What? What? What?
And I'm saying you just have to be specific. You guys are tiny by landmass.
I heard you. Okay. Get it. Staying focused, staying on point. So. Yeah. I like it that we're talking about the central bank. What I don't like is starting a ball or game, Helmut, without knowing, are we actually playing the game?
My biggest fear, especially when it comes to Africa, is, look, everything is going to boil down to money. Chances are very high. The whole event was based on donor funding. Now, and then you get there and you want to talk about how to start. September is just around the corner. Let's see how this whole Africa Monetary Institute is going to go in terms of, you know, of implementation. And if they are going to have another, look, we have track records like silencing of the guns by 2021.
Now track record, huh?
Yeah, a very terrible one in terms of
if there ever was one, if there ever was a record to trace.
Uh-huh.
Look, Helmut, I think we have to make now a public pact here not to mention silencing the guns anymore, because it literally failed abysmally.
Oh, no, it did.
Because you can't even go and ask a expert of international relations what happened to the thing. Because you can see it on the ground.
Look, that's exactly the point that I keep making. Programs require funding. We do not want to dedicate funding to the organization that's making these expensive promises, as Mr. Chauvin puts it.
Yeah.
Every year, now, this was on the 39th session of the African Union. They are coming together and they're saying, you know, we have to implement this and this and this. But this is not the first time the African Union is basically putting together all these things. And then realizing that most of it fails. Now, for the most part, why does it fail? Because to implement it, it requires funding. If if the African Union member states do not want to contribute financially to the organization, it makes implementing those plans borderline impossible.
But
every year we're making, at this point I'm going.
But here's the concern, Helmut. What did the country that hosts the AU headquarters do? It decided to go have its own civil war.
Almost started one with Somalia.
Definitely. And primarily almost literally annoyed two others. One is now having its own civil war, Sudan and Egypt.
They're still not talking
for building a dam.
Yeah.
On one of the Nile rivers. So we also have to understand this discussion of, you know, how diplomacy has to work so that we don't step on each other's toes, specifically as Africans, specifically our African leaders. Because even till the day, Hamoud, in January or February, when news broke out supposedly that the South Africans said that Namibia is the issue why, what's that dam or the phase of that Orange River Senku, development, which literally just means the next phase of it is to sell water to Botswana through Johannesburg, Pretoria. And apparently Namibia was said, no, we don't like this development. But yeah. Namibia has known since 2008 when the Orange River, or Rasakom, when the Orange River Senku Commission was established, we've been in the loop about this dam development taking place in Lesotho,
mm-hmm.
which the South African government and Lesotho have partnered up to. And the aim, and it happens in phases, the aim is also supply water to the Highveld area. The Highveld area is literally that Gauteng, North Transvaal, Northwest area, the area that borders onto Botswana and Zimbabwe of South Africa, to channel water up there, you know, basically upwards, upstream, and then further take it to channel water into Botswana. Namibia has known about this. Now, suddenly in 2026, when Namibia showed up to a Botswana government-hosted event last year, Namibia now suddenly doesn't know anything. We didn't have government representatives of the Ministry of Agriculture. Ministry of Agriculture, you guys keep showing up in the spotlight here on the Home Run. We find you guys. Don't worry. Don't worry. And literally, and it was a director that we sent.
Yeah.
The position level of the person was a director that we sent to Botswana.
That's how powerful we are.
No, Hamoud, they were of equal standing. All the people that participated in this event in Botswana.
Really?
Yeah, they were all directors. Similar standing. You can't send an executive director here and I'm sending you a director here. People have to be of the same.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that.
This means the person you're sending can't make decisions, while the person I'm sending can make decisions.
The point I'm saying is the track record, the precedent that has been set on an international level is, you can send, real estate agents to negotiate with PhD
that
holders.
That is Donald Trump, Herman. Let us identify it for what it is.
And also the deals keep falling on their faces.
And we keep hearing misinformation. But before we continue, we're going to take a short ad break, guys. Velvita University for the 2026 July applications that are now open for the Faculty of Health Sciences for the Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing, Level 8. Admission requirements for candidates are as follows. Candidates must have a recognized nursing qualification at an NQF Level 7 or higher from any recognized higher learning institution. Candidates must be a registered nurse or midwife with the Nursing Council of Namibia or the HPCNA. Candidates must have a minimum of 2 years working experience as a nurse or midwife in any health facility, and candidates must be able to write a short essay describing the motivation for pursuing the postgraduate diploma in community health nursing. Qualification duration is 1 year. Mode of delivery will be full-time. For more information, please call 081-403-6406. Velvita University, where everyone is an achiever. So yeah, that's what we face.
So our...
Don't do a Donald Trump, Hamoud. Don't send a real estate agent. You send an adequately qualified individual.
Nuclear deal.
To go and negotiate about nuclear. What does a real estate developer know? Because a real estate developer is going to come there.
A lot about ripping people off their houses.
Because a real estate developer is going to show up there talking about properties and homes. And people are like, my guy.
We are here to talk about literal atoms.
The content here is about science. Not about whose mortgage is paid or not. And who's going to cut a deal from an interest rate? No. That's not where we are.
First of all, that's a sign that you don't want to negotiate.
Firstly, yes.
Yeah.
Firstly, and secondly, you are disrespecting the actual
opponent,
aim of the negotiations.
That's not a negotiation.
I mean, Hamoud, if I was Iran, I wouldn't even have entertained I wouldn't even have entertained the United States in any negotiation process.
Like, this is a diplomatic negotiation. Bring me diplomats. Bring me diplomats. Those that actually understand the art of negotiating. Real estate guys are the size of those guys. They're not negotiating for the most part. They are bulldozing. Even with their clients.
But here's the thing, Hamoud. You can bulldoze in your economy with your clients in your country.
Yeah.
Ne?
No, I'm saying that's the mentality they're taking to it. But nuclear...
But if
who even came up with that idea?
But if you show up to talk to another diplomat about his country, loss.
On your own terms.
Loss. Mm. You're coming with your country's terms. Loss.
But in my country, but that's
no one
your
cares.
Country.
Everyone will say no one cares.
Yeah.
We are sticking to international law.
What does it say?
What does it say? I did not read. Go Google it.
You can't Google a nuclear discussion.
No, but really, Hamoud, you should have thought about this.
Yeah.
And that's what makes, I mean, the John Stewart parody that he did this for this past week was literally the block equals unblock.
Oh,
oh my goodness. Yeah, I still can't get over it. Every time I say it, I say it with a straight phrase and then I start laughing. Block equals unblock.
The may be simple, people.
Oh my goodness. Oh, it's horrible. But yeah. This is from a president, guys. Block equals unblock. So yeah. For the love of me, Hamoud, I still can't understand specifically the aim of why are we in this ridiculous conflict. Even though Jiang Shuiqin had explained it to us, who's an academic of what is that field of study that Jeffrey Sachs kept mentioning?
Game theory.
And game theory, you can see, is literally problematic because game theory misses a lot of variables.
For example,
game Sachs highlighted specifically when it comes to developing countries like us from the southern, from the global south.
Mm-hmm.
Global south countries are willing to compromise and negotiate.
Yeah.
They always negotiate with each other.
Yeah.
They find common ground. They find a common place and they go like, hey guys, let's do this, let's do that.
There are compromises in all negotiations.
Always.
The thing is, if you have a strong military power, you are obviously going to be like, you know what, you have to compromise. I don't have to.
Yeah. And then the other country can also say one day, you know what, doesn't matter how small I am, I might be Lesotho or Eswatini, but I'm not going to compromise. And then what do you have? Because the one is entitled to sovereign identity, and so are you with a strong army, with a very powerful army. What are you going to do? Are you just going to have a random conflict there just for the fun of it, and everybody's going to go, oh, okay, you love beating down on small guys.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
First of all, let's look. I'm looking forward to September just for this particular topic of the establishment of Continental Central Bank and the pipeline discussion, subsequent discussion that builds that also, you know, talks about the establishment of a continental level currency. It's going to have English on one side and Arabic on the other, and English and French. Okay, you know what?
Hamoud, you better put that currency in the next, like I said, in the next century. If we don't have the AFCFTA running around with massive open toes like this, like the spaces between my fingers. If we don't have the AFCFTA being of benefit to everyone, a single currency is going to be useless by then. Then the aim of having that AU central bank is not going to mean anything in the bigger scheme of things.
Yeah.
And on that particular note, guys, David has shown up. We've appropriated 4 minutes. We don't feel bad because we love it. And we'll see each other same time, same place tomorrow. Hamoud, you don't feel bad, right?
No, I'm thinking about what's the name of that currency will be. But anyway, until tomorrow, same time, same place, on your favorite app, radio station, African currency.
Yeah.
African dollar, aye.
Nah,
yeah. I think we should name it Scipio Africanus. No, the last three words, four words of that.
What was the Roman currency, Hamoud?
African
it's
what?
Still someone else's currency, yeah. David. Roman currency name was the... What? Name, Roman currency name. What was the Roman currency name? I think it was the lira.
Yeah, you look for the
it
currency.
It was the denarius. Yeah, we can resuscitate an old currency. The denarius.
Denarius, Tigerian, Thousands. That sounds like a Game of Thrones.
With that too, you know.
Yeah.
So on that note, guys, see each other same time, same place tomorrow. Look out for the Villager e-paper tomorrow as well.
Yeah.